Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. This month, in celebration of the holidays, we bring you a Christmas tale by Steve Hawkinsmith, author of the Edgar, Anthony, Seamus, and Dillis Award-nominated series of Sherlockian novels featuring cowboys Big Red and Old Red Amleymeyer. He's also the author of a series of children's books and of a zombie trilogy based on the characters and settings of Jane Austen. The thread that runs through almost all of Steve Hawkinsmith's books and stories is humor, and that's true of the following story, first published in the January 2002 issue of EQMM. It's read by professional voiceover artist Mike Wiltrout.
Special Delivery by Steve Hawkinsmith. Me and Santa Claus? I reckon we got a thing or two in common. Not in the looks department, obviously. I look more like a shriveled old elf than your classic jolly fat man. But the way I see it, Santa's a trucker. Just like I was for 30-something-odd years. Now, obviously, he ain't a trucker in your literal, biblical sense. The man don't drive a rig, and he ain't a teamster, far as I know. But he's the fella gets the goods from point A to point B. Now, the elves, they're your manufacturers, and the kids, they're your customers. And Santa's the man who brings them together, just like a trucker. You know, I even pulled a Santa one year, worked a real Christmas miracle for the children of River City. Well, for a toy store in River City, really, and for myself. But it's a whopper of a Christmas tale all the same. They ought to make one of them cartoon shows about it, like the ones they show on the TV every year. Fetch me over a plate of them nachos and another beer. Maybe I'll tell it to you. Thank you. So now let's say you and me climb in my magical time machine, go way on back to the ancient year of 1983. I had it pretty sweet in them days. My wife Bootsy, God bless her, she pulled in good money at the Lawn Devil plant. That was before they packed it all up and shipped it to Mexico, you understand. Back then, Lawn Devil brought good money into River City and into our house. I own my own rig, didn't work for no damn buddy but myself. Could do a job or not do a job as I pleased, more or less. Not many truckers have things that cushy. This is years before Bootsy got sick. We were all set for our usual Christmas Eve. Bootsy's mom was going to come over with a ham. We'd give each other presents. Boys getting a fight about who got what record album and who got what poster and who got what t-shirt and all what. Then Bootsy and her mama and me would sip on some fuzzy navels and sing along with Johnny Mathis and Elvis while the boys sneaked out back to go kill a six-pack with their friends behind the garage. Don't sound like much, does it? But boy, I sure miss it. I missed it this year I'm talking about, too. Because the day before Christmas, I get a call from Ivor Boroborinsky. Now, he and his brother Basil, they used to run a small transport company down around Evansville. Still do now, think of it. They're a bit on the seedy side, but not what you'd call outright shady. Now, whenever I got a call from Boroborinsky, I knew it was going to be something interesting. Because them two boys never stuck their noses into anything that weren't. Every job with them was a double-rush, long-haul, ask-us-no-questions-we'll-tell-you-no-lies kind of deal. And it always ended up being a story. You listen real good to this one, maybe I'll tell you about the time they had me drop off a whole herd of reindeer at a dang mall. So anyways, there it was, Christmas Eve, and Ivor calls me up, says, "Got a job for you, Bass." "Uh-huh," I says. "You'll probably want to leave right away," he says. "Uh-uh," I say. That don't faze Ivor. "You'll have to be back by 10 a.m. tomorrow," says. I don't even bother with the uh-uh this time. Remember now, tomorrow is Christmas Day. "Round trip's about 1,000 miles, Ivor says. I could have whistled or groaned or asked him how much Jack he put in his eggnog, but I stayed quiet. And that's when he mentioned how much he'd pay. Bootsy heard me gasp from the kitchen and hustled over, looking worried. She probably thought somebody died or the church burned down or one of the boys had got himself arrested again. I gave her a don't worry shake of my head, but my words didn't comfort her much. "You know I don't haul drugs or guns, Ivor," I says. "I ain't asking you to," he says. "Well, I don't get it, then," I say, "because that figure you just mentioned is obscene. If it was a movie, Jerry Falwell'd tell me to boycott it." Then he says something that really made me think he'd gotten carried away with the Christmas spirits that day. "You ever heard of a Cabbage Patch Kid?" Well, I hadn't. I look at Bootsy, roll my eyes, and do that little finger circle around the ear crazy sign. I figure I'm talking to a Looney Tune. No, I have not, I say, getting ready to hang up before he asks me whether I believe in the abominable snowman. They're dolls, he says. Ask your wife about them, she'll know. Everybody's crazy for them this year. Stores can't keep them on the shelves. You got people practically killing each other for the chance to buy one. They've been fights, riots, you name it. Over a doll, I say. I still don't exactly believe him at this point, but he's starting to make some kind of sense. Over a doll, Ivor says. And right now in River City, you can't buy a single one of them. Sold out on Christmas Eve. I says. The company that makes them is working around the clock to crank out more, Ivor says. The folks over at Monkeyberry Toys have a consignment on order that'll be ready tonight at midnight. 600 dolls, and they know they can sell every dang one of them if we can get them back to River City on Christmas Day. I says. Can you hold on a minute? Ivor grunts at me, and I slap a hand over the mouthpiece of the phone. Bootsy, I says, Ivor Borbrinsky wants me to do a special haul for him, like right now, about 1,000 miles. Says Bootsy, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I drop it. I tell her how much they'll pay. You want Pepsi or Mountain Dew this trip, she says. Mountain Dew, I tell her. And Ivor overhears that and knows what it means. He starts telling me where to go get them dolls. Now, usually Ivor would have me pick up a load of this or that on my way out of town. In the trucking business, it don't pay to go nowhere with an empty trailer. But Ivor just tells me, forget it. This is rush stuff, and the Monkeyberry folks couldn't get anyone else to do it, and the profit margin is covered but good. I just got to go grab them toys, get them back to River City by Christmas morning. See? Just like Santa Claus. So less than 30 minutes later, I'm heading east on I-70. Pennsylvania, here I come. Turns out them kids didn't grow in no cabbage patch. They's made in this factory in a dumpy little industrial park outside Pittsburgh. This was back when you could actually find a doll that didn't have Made in China tattooed on its keister, you understand? They may as well have come from the North Pole, though. Whammy. Second I hit the road, here come the snow. It starts off all slow and purdy, and I got my Johnny Mathis on the tape deck singing, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow, and it's real cute. But darn it all, if Mother Nature don't take Johnny serious, the snow just don't stop. It didn't take long to go from cute to a pain in the butt to downright dangerous. And I got hours and hours to go. That's where the Mountain Dew come in. Load me up with a couple cases of that stuff. I could drive to the moon and back without making a pit stop. And when one can wore off, I'd pop open another. And when I get tired of that, I'd start tossing lemon heads in my mouth and give it an extra kick. Man can't live on caffeine alone. But he needs sugar, too. So by the time I get to the factory, here's what I got on my bodily odometer. 15 cans of Dew, 2 jumbo boxes of lemon heads, God only knows how many cigarettes, enough beef jerky to start my own cattle drive, and about 500 close calls with ice, snow, deer, state troopers, and cars driven by drunks and pinheads. And I gotta face that all over again on the way back, all without a single wink of sleep. Which is not exactly legal, but you know how it is. Trucker's logbook's got more fairy tales per page than Mother Goose. When I finally get to the factory, it's something like 11:45 in the p.m., right on schedule, on my part anyway. But it turns out I'm the 20th truck in line. They got people in the factory working quadruple overtime. Those dolls are breaking the sound barrier. They come flying off the assembly line and still they're behind schedule. The demand was just too large. So I'm told to sit down, shut up, wait my turn. Which I do, but not till after I've gotten me my first gander at them dolls. They're in boxes all pushed together by the 100 and wrapped up tight in industrial plastic. But if you get up close and squint, you can see their pudgy faces back there. Like row after row of chubby little mummies staring out at you through their shrouds. Holy cheese whiz, I says. That's what all this fuss is about? Look like somebody busted these babies in the face with a baseball bat. Any kid with one of those in her bed's gonna wake up screaming for sure. The toy people aren't exactly amused by this, maybe because they're just as tired as me. So I shut my trap, climb into my cab, and turn up my Elvis Christmas tape real loud. But I'm off my stride with the Mountain Dew, and nature takes its course. 1 minute Elvis is singing about having a blue Christmas without you. Next he's telling me to run for my life because them Cabbage Patch kids are the unholy spawn of Satan. I even see him one peeking at me in the rearview mirror. its beady little eyes glowing in the dark, blood trickling from its nasty, puckered mouth. I try to yell for help, but nothing come out. Little monster's pulling at the handle of the door, and there's something pink and pulpy caught in its teeth, and I can hear it say, I'm hungry, Daddy. I can't move a muscle, and knock, knock, knock. Suddenly some bossy foreman's telling me to wake the heck up because it's my turn to load. First thing I do, of course, is pop open another soda. Then I take a peek at my watch and nearly give myself a Mountain Dew shower I jumped so bad. It's almost 2 in the zippity-doo-dah morning. These unmentionable so-and-sos let me sleep for 2 blankety-blank hours. I rev up my rig, whip around to the loading dock, back up 55 mile per, hop out and start tapping my foot, staring at that loading crew so hard my eyes about to pop out my skull. And they get the message, too. Take it easy, fella, the foreman says to me. We know. We got families to get home to, too. Yeah, but mine's 500 miles away. Okay, the foreman says, all irritable-like. But he and his boys work fast. 20 minutes later, he's sticking a form under my face saying, all right, fella, sign it and haul. I look in the trailer. I don't like what I see. Thing's more than half empty. That's $600, I says. Hey, they're dolls, not TVs or hogs or whatever you used to hauling. He slaps the paper he's trying to get me to sign. 600, just like it say on the order. All right, I said. You know your business. Damn straight, the foreman says, and pardon my French for saying it now. I sign, and I haul. The snow's still coming down as I pull out. There's maybe 8 inches on the ground at this point, and it's starting to drift. It don't look good. But I'm in a fine mood because I'm finally on my second leg. So it's just one more big push and I'm home. The factory's about 5 miles off I-71. All I gotta do is get on the interstate, crank up the Christmas tunes, and let the dew do the rest. I'm about halfway to 71 on this dark little 2-lane stretch through the woods when I see a big orange sign propped up in the middle of the road. Detour, it says. There's a black arrow pointing off onto something that looks like about half a step from a deer trail. But the weather being so bad and all, I've just figured it's drifting up ahead and the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation must know what they're doing, right? I turn onto the detour road. Now, this ain't one of your classic straight as an arrow roads mapped out by a cartographer with a degree from a big state school. It follows a creek bed. It twists and it turns and doubles back on itself. Till you don't know if you're headed east, west, north, south, or straight down. I was out of sight of the main road before I'd gone 30 yards. By the time I'd gone 100, I was beginning to think of turning around, if I could ever find a spot to do it. 18-wheelers aren't exactly known for their maneuverability. Of course, I'm none too happy about what this is going to do to my ETA, and none too happy becomes downright PO'd when I see a fella in the middle of the road up ahead waving his arms. A few yards behind him, there's a rusty old Buick half on, half off the road at a cockeyed angle. Looks like some bud-happy yahoo couldn't handle the snow. Now it's up to old Bass to save the day, while 10 a.m. Christmas morning gets closer and closer. I'll admit it. There was a part of me that just wanted to keep on trucking. I guess all that joy to the world, spirit of Christmas stuff was sloshing around in my head along with all that Mountain Dew. And I stopped. I roll down the window, lean out, and says, well, what's the trouble, buddy? To which the fella in the road has 2 interesting responses. One, he rolls down the stocking cap on his head so it covers his face. Turns out it's a ski mask. And 2, he reaches under his coat and pulls out a revolver, which he proceeds to point in the general direction of my head as he walks over to my truck.
No trouble here, buddy. Unless you make some.
Now, I'm usually pretty good with the snappy comebacks, but this time, I'll admit, I wasn't up to the challenge. All I could get out of my mouth was something none too snappy, like, what? Or maybe, huh?
Out.
Now, I don't know about you, but my first inclination is to do what people pointing guns at me tell me to do. But just as my hand wraps around the door handle and I'm getting ready to climb down from a rig, I see lights flashing over the snow. Headlights. Someone's driving up behind us. Could be the state police. Could be some poor sucker about to get his head blowed off because he's just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Could be both. I freeze. Mr. Gunn glances down the road toward the lights, then takes another step towards me.
You deef or something? He says.
He cocks a revolver.
I said, out.
Now the lights are close now. So close Mr. Gunn is lit up like he's on stage at a girly bar. Plain as day, I can see his faded blue jeans and raggedy parka and muddy good old boy boots. And I notice he's not the biggest buck in the herd, and his hands shaking maybe a little more than cold would account for. And I start to figure that this here highwayman ain't exactly Jesse James, which doesn't help whoever's driving towards us. This fella might not be a professional, but he's got himself a gun, and that can be enough. The crunch of snow and gravel's getting pretty loud now, and the lights are getting brighter, but Mr. Gunn's still focused on me, me, me.
I ain't kidding around here, you so-and-so,
he says. Except his language a little stronger than that.
Get out the ding-dang truck.
A beat-up red pick-em-up truck rolls to a stop behind him while he's saying this, and I figure this is when the shooting's gonna start. Now I'm getting ready to throw myself down the floor of the cab, start praying for a miracle, when I notice the orange detour sign lying in the back of the truck. Heavyset fella steps out the pickup, walks up to Mr. Gunn, and he's got himself a ski mask too. Has his Campbell's soup written across his forehead and good on the chin. The mask is stretched so tight across his fat face the fabric looks like the rip, like maybe it's three sizes too small. What's going on here? He got him a southern accent so thick he could make a mattress out of it.
He won't get out the truck,
Mr. Gunn says. His voice is high-pitched, nervous, and for the first time I notice his accent instead of just being hypnotized by a Smith & Wesson. Sounded like these two were mountaineers, kid hillbillies up from West Virginia. Well, heck, Mr. Soup says, and he snatches the revolver right out of Mr. Gunn's hand. He steps up to the footboard of my rig and brings the bell right up under my nose. This just ain't your night, is it? He says, and a big grin stretches the fabric of his mask even further. First truck we saw went whoosh, right by our little detour sign, didn't even slow down. The second one come down this way, but didn't even bother stopping to help my buddy here. On Christmas Eve yet. So we been out here waiting a long time. We cold, we tired, we want them babies. So just step out the truck. I won't have to mess up your pretty face with a couple bullets. Now, the more this fella talks to me, the more time I got to stew on things. I ain't a brave man, but I can be a bad-tempered one, and a temper can make a coward do things a bona fide he-man hero would think was crazy. And I was getting madder and madder that these two holler dwellers were trying to steal my rig after all the hours I'd put in, and with all that money I had waiting for me at the end of the haul. So I decided I wasn't going to make it easy for him. You say you want what now, I says? Mr. Soup's grin goes a little lopsided.
Cabbage patch, kids,
the former Mr. Gunn, now Mr. Gunless, I suppose, says from behind him.
We know you got him.
Cabbage kids, I says, giving Mr. Gunless a what the look. I turn to Mr. Soup and lower my voice. Is he all right? Mr. Soup's smile has flopped all the way over into a frown now. Don't think you can BS me, mister, he says. There's only one factory up that road, and it's still working. The tall factory. Yeah, that's right, I says. I just dropped off a load of plastic there. I don't know nothing about no cabbage babies or whatever it is you're looking for. Sounded to me like something you'd get in a grocery store. I see a little fire kindle up in Soup's eyes, and I'm beginning to wonder if I just made the biggest mistake of my too short by half life when I hear Gunless say,
what we gonna do?
He lying, Soup says.
What if he ain't lying?
He lying.
Well, what if he ain't lying?
He lying.
Well, what if he ain't lying?
He lying, you fool. Gunless goes all quiet for a second. Then he says in a quiet kind of voice,
well, what if he ain't lying?
Soup taking a deep breath. When he exhales, I get a nasty whiff of Cheetos and beer. We gonna check, he says to his partner. Then he turns back to me. And if you is lying, I'm not gonna kill you with this. And he gives the revolver a little wave. Then he reaches up under his jacket with his left hand, fiddle with something. Hand come back with a Rambo-looking knife in it. I'm gonna kill you with this. There'll be no need for any killing, I says. We'll see about that, Soupy says. Now give me them keys so we can open up this trailer and take a look. Now lickety-split a plan for him in my head. I give the yokels the keys, and while they're back checking on my cargo, I hop out and slip into Soup's truck, which is still sitting there with the engine running. Just as quick, Soup seems to have the same thought. Better yet, he says, get on out there and open it up yourself. He stepped away from the door, but he's keeping that gun on me, I get the sudden feeling I've bluffed about as far as I can bluff, and any more dilly-dallying is going to get me a hole in the head bigger than the one I already got. All right, I says. I pull the keys from the ignition, open the door, and slip out the cab. Once I hit the ground, I notice just how puny Gunless really is. I mean, surely Temple could take this guy in a fair fight, and it gives me ideas. Then I turn toward his pal. Now, Soup wasn't any Andre the Giant, but he could have been Andre's not-so-little brother, I'll tell you that. I'd have to go up in a hot air balloon just to take a poke at his chin. So bare-knuckle brawling was definitely out the question as a solution to my problems. Which was okay, anyhow, to be honest with you. I can't fight worth spit. "Go on," Soup says. He didn't give me a shove or nothing because he's got his hands full with the gun and the knife. But those do all the shoving he needs done. I start towards the back of the truck. I don't set any speed records getting back there, though. I'm calculating as I walk. Do I try to roll under the trailer and run off into the woods on the other side? Or do I, well, roll under the trailer and run off into the woods on the other side? It was all I could think of other than just growing wings and learning how to fly, which seemed like a bit of a long shot. Just as I'm about to duck under the truck and probably get a bullet in the butt in the process, there's no more truck to duck under. Just them big darn semi-wheels. I've been so deep in thought planning my getaway, I've blown my chance. So there I am at the back end of my trailer with Hulk Hogan holding a gun and a knife on me, and I definitely don't feel those wings popping out. It was beginning to look like there was no way I was going to save my truck, and the only way I was going to save my life was through vigorous begging and pleading for mercy. "Open up," Soup says. I do as I told without any back talk, knowing it's a little late to start earning brownie points, but figuring I may as well try. I unlock the bolt and pull the trailer doors open, and there, plain as day before our eyes, was nothing. It was pitch black in there. Soup and Gunless both lean forward, look at each other, and lean forward again. "See?" I says hopefully. "Nothing."
"I don't see any dolls,"
Gunless says to the criminal mastermind.
"Shut up,"
Soup spits back. He pushes up against the trailer and leans in real far. I can see one little eye under the candle squinting away.
"There's something back in there."
He squints so hard it's a wonder he can see it all.
"In the very back."
"Oh, that," I says. "Well, that's not any cauliflower batch babies or nothing. Well, that's just some extra plastic. I got me another delivery to make in the morning." My little pause between some and extra plastic was maybe like 1 second too long, but I knew it might have been long enough to earn me a hunting knife bow tie. Soup gave me a stone-cold look, and I can tell he's wondering about whether to slit my throat right then or wait and see how mad he should be when he does it. After a very long moment, Soup decides to save the fun for later.
"Get up in there and check it out," he says to his buddy.
Gunless just kind of gapes at Soup for a while. I don't know, maybe he's afraid of the dark or something. But then he turns and hauls himself up into the trailer with a big grunt. I get a gander at the full moon as he goes up, if you know what I mean. I don't know why it is hillbillies can't seem to keep their pants up over their backsides. So Gunless goes groping off into the blackness, and in a few seconds there's a oomph that says he's bumped into my cargo.
"What do you see?"
Soup calls out.
"Can't see nothing," Gunless says.
I hear his hands pawing around all over the shrink-wrapped dolls.
"But there's something here, all right. It's big. Feels like it's wrapped up in plastic."
Now at that moment, a terrifying thought pops into my head. All these two rocket scientists need to do is pull Soup's pickup truck around and use the headlights to get a good look inside my trailer. Then they'll see they got what they want, and I've been lying, and it's goodnight, Nelly, and goodbye, Bass. And it's while I'm trembling over this, not volunteering the idea, of course, that I finally get those wings I've been hoping for.
"Oh, heck, let me have a look,"
Soup says, or words to that effect. And he puts his fists up on the back ledge of the trailer, still clutching the gun and knife, throws up a leg as thick as a tree trunk, and pushes himself up inside. I am so stunned by this, it takes me a second to do the obvious thing, which is slam that trailer shut at supersonic speed. It takes Soup the same amount of time to realize what he's done, and I see him whirl around just as the doors go clang in his face. I relock the bolt a split second before Soup throws himself against the doors. There's a crash. I hear him stumble back and fall, cursing up a storm the whole time. A second later, Things get real noisy when two sets of boot-covered feet start kicking at the doors.
Let me out of here!
Gunless screams.
Let me out of here!
He sounds real hysterical, like maybe he really is afraid of the dark. And that's when I take the dunce cap off Soup and put it on my own fool head. Now just calm down there, boys. I say I ain't gonna... The first bullet come flying through the trailer door and kept right on going through my jacket just under my left arm. Second one took a little nip off my left ear. You can still see the scar right there. I didn't wait around for the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth bullets. I dived head first under the trailer, threw my hands up over my head. Not that my two little hands were going to keep a bullet out of my brain, if that's where it wanted to go. Bang, bang. Bang, bang. Bang. Click, click. And then? Nothing. I'm lying there in the snow and gravel and frozen mud under the back of the truck, and I'm thinking, well, I'm cold and scared, my ear hurts like a hum-hum. So I guess I'm still alive. But I'm not too anxious to get up and take advantage of that, figuring that's just going to invite Soup to start popping off again. While I'm down there on my belly just trying to be quiet and think quiet thoughts, I hear Soup and Gunless in the truck above me.
Did you get him?
Gunless says. Pause.
Oh no.
You know, if you did get him, who gonna let us out this truck here?
Pause.
Oh no.
You're out of bullets too, ain't you?
Pause.
Yep.
Where are the extras?
Pause.
In my pickup.
Pause.
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 I'm scared, Buck.
Shut up, Kev.
Now you might think all my troubles is over at this point, but I got me a dilemma on my hands. The responsible law-abiding thing to do is to head to the nearest state police outpost, drop Buck and Kev off, and let the great state of Pennsylvania decide their fate. But I can't just pull up and unload my new cargo like it's a bunch of frozen fish sticks. There's going to be questions. There's going to be paperwork. There's the great likelihood that someone's going to figure out just how much driving I'd planned on doing in the span of 24 hours, an amount of time behind the wheel which is not exactly legal, you understand? And most importantly, there is 100% absolute guaranteed certainty that I ain't going to make it back to River City by no 10 a.m. Christmas morning, or 11 a.m. Christmas morning, or even 5 p.m. Christmas night. Which means all this will have happened for nothing. So I did what I think any self-respecting trucker would have done. I crawled out from under the trailer, hopped back up in my cab, fired up the engine, and headed for the interstate. It took me 7 hours to get to River City, and I didn't need any dew to keep me awake. I had so much adrenaline pumping through my veins, I could have won the Kentucky Derby without benefit of a horse. Plus, my ear was throbbing away the whole time, and it's hard to get sleepy when it feels like a badger's nibbling on the side of your head. I pulled into the parking lot out front of Monkey Berry Toys at 10:15 a.m., and I am telling you, that place was packed. Cars, cars, cars. Most of them empty. There's this big mob jammed up around the doors to the store. When everybody sees me pull up, they let out this shrieking scream shout. All of a sudden, I've got 300 doll-crazy women chasing after me. I barely made it around the side of the store ahead of them. Around the corner, there's the loading dock, about a dozen Monkey Berry employees waiting for me. I also see five familiar faces. Basil and Ivor Borborinsky, and my trucking buddies Dave Reeves, Milford Core, and Ernie Hutchings. I'd CB'd ahead for the cavalry, see, and there they were. While the Monkey Berry folks go try to head off the stampeding moms, I get my rig pulled around the back up to the dock. Then I climb out, go around the back of the trailer where the boys are waiting for me with the Monkey Berry manager.
Good gosh, Bass, you look like heck.
You should see the other fellas, I say. In fact, you can. Do me a favor and try to look tough for a minute, would you? They ain't gonna be too jolly. And I open up the trailer doors, and there's my two Robin Hood wannabes squinting at the light, which they hadn't seen in quite some time, except maybe what came through the bullet holes. They looked like they'd just spent a day tumbling around in a clothes dryer. I admit I didn't go out of my way to avoid every pothole I saw on my way back to River City. I suggest you two get a move on before somebody calls the police, I says. Soup stands up slowly and stumbles towards us. He's still got his mask on, but I can read his eyes. He don't look angry, just confused.
Where are we?
The North Pole, I say. Now scoot. Soup looks us all up and down for a second, then comes to the only logical conclusion. He's getting off easy.
Let's go, Kev,
he says, and the two of them come on out the truck, hop off the loading dock, and walk off into a beautiful, crisp, clear Indiana winter morning. From there, I don't know where they went, and I don't much care. Don't explain, the Monkey Berry manager says. He's already rushed into the truck to check out the dolls. Then he comes back to me with a delivery voucher and a pen. Just sign this. With pleasure. And I haven't even gotten halfway through my name when the manager man yanks the paperwork back and starts shouting, "Go, go, go!" at more Monkey Berry employees who almost run right over us. They're so frantic to get those darn dolls on the shelves. "Come on, Bass, tell us what happened," Milford says after we jumped out of the way. "Well, I'll tell you," I say. And then my knees start to buckle at the idea of running through the whole thing. "Fellas, I'm exhausted. Thank you for your help, but I'm going to have to give you a rain check on this story." The boys are all geared jammers like me, and they know what it's like to come off a long haul. So they all slap me on the back and tell me to go on home. "I'll have your check for you tomorrow," Ivor says as I'm going. "You better," I say. I don't know how I got home. The job was done, the adrenaline was wearing off, and I couldn't tell if my eyes were open or not. When I came in the door, Bootsy catches sight of my bloody ear and just about screams. "Shush," I say, "you'll wake the boys." This was back when noon was early rising for them. "What happened to your ear, Billy?" Bootsy says. She's the only one ever called me Billy. I sit down on the lazy boy and look at the Christmas tree and the presents underneath it and the cards and the porcelain Santas and lights all over the place. "I can't tell you how sweet it is to be home for Christmas," I say. Then I fall asleep in the time it takes to tell it. When I woke up, it was December 26.
Special Delivery is copyrighted by Steve Hawkinsmith. Reading, recording, and mixing for this podcast were done by Mike Wiltrout. Adjustments to the recording to make it suitable for our podcast series were done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.